You're listening to 1001 Album Club, where every episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums You Must Hear Before You Die.
Welcome to the club. Welcome to the club. Welcome to 1001 Album Club. You take 500
at 250.
At 250.
Plus one.
Album Club.
To college. But when she's on a bike, she had the knowledge to get what she wanted.
Stars of track and field you are. Stars of track and field you are. Stars of track and field are beautiful people. Stars of track and field you are. Stars of track and
all right, for this episode, we'll be talking about Bella and Sebastian, If You're Feeling Sinister. In the room, I have Ben.
Feeling sinister.
And Rob.
I'm feeling rig.
If You Are Feeling Sinister is the second album by the Scottish indie pop band Bella and Sebastian. It was released in 1996 on Jeepster Records in the UK and 1997 by Matador in the United States. The producer was Tony Dugan. The genre is chamber pop, chamber folk, indie rock, indie pop, and twee pop. And I'm going to read from All Music Review, Stephen Thomas Irwine. Bella and Sebastian's second record, If You're Feeling Sinister, is, for all intents and purposes, really their first, since their debut in 1996 was not heard outside of privileged inner circles. And If You're Feeling Sinister really did have quite a bit of an impact upon its release in 96, largely because during the first half of the 90s, the whimsy and preciousness that had been an integral part of alternative music was suppressed by grunge. Whimsy and preciousness are an integral part of If You're Feeling Sinister. Why repeat yourself like this? I don't understand.
Because of the whimsy.
I guess. Along with clever wit and gentle, intricate arrangements, a wonderful blend of the Smiths and Simon and Garfunkel's, to be reductive. Even if it's firmly within the college bed-sit tradition, it is unabashedly retrogressive that gives Sinister a special timeless character that's enhanced by Stuart Murdoch's wonderful, lively songwriting. Blessed with an impish sense of humor, a sly turn of phrase, and alluring fey voice, he gives this record a real sense of backbone. In that humor, it is far more biting than the music appears, and the music is far more substantial than it initially seems. Sinister plays like a great forgotten album, couched in the 80s indie, 90s attitude, and 60s folk pop. It's beautifully out of time, and even if other Bell and Sebastian albums sound like it, this is where they achieved a sense of grace. All right, what do we think of Bell and Sebastian, If You're Feeling Sinister?
First listen, it's real good.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fantastic album.
This is my favorite album by them, and I like this band.
I think so, too. Yeah, I went and listened to some of the others just to make sure this mm-hmm. week or past few weeks, and this one just holds up. Every single song has a special
mm-hmm.
cadence to it. It starts really strong, it ends really strong, and just when you want something different, it provides that.
It's a collection of, like, 10 good songs.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's airtight, but, yeah, like, every song on this, it's just like, man, that's a nice little song there.
They're beautiful songs, too. I mean, starting off with just a very simple, his voice, you know, kind of speaking as if you're having a conversation mm-hmm. from Stars of Track and Field, and then bringing in different instrumentation. You know, we're hearing the horn now playing the melody in this, and then going to seeing other people, it brings in strings, you know, more and more, it gets more elaborate, and then it kind of takes it back down on certain songs, brings it back up. It's so good. It's like the best, if I had to say, it's like the best Donovan record you could wish for. Like, whimsy, interesting,
like nostalgia, melancholy. Yeah.
It makes you also feel like if you're at that college age, it has the references to...
Which I was.
To literature and movies and other artists.
Yeah.
You know, it's dropping all those names, and I'm kind of here for it.
Both the opener, Stars of Track and Field, and the closer, Judy and the Dream of Horses, they both start really sparse and then build up through the whole song.
Yeah.
It's cool to like bookend an album like that.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, this is my, what would you say, bookends, like this.
Simon and Garfunkel were into bookends.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
They were.
And this, when I was getting into, when we were talking about those other bands, like Prefab Sprout, I was like, this, I bet people feel about that album the way I feel about this album.
Could be.
Yeah. It's like, at a specific time, when you're having those sort of vulnerable relationships with people... When you want a little bit of a, like you said, yeah, nostalgia.
Yeah.
It provides nostalgia somehow. Maybe it's just acoustic guitar or just the sort of melodies.
I mean, I get what you're saying, but as a 43, almost 44-year-old man listening to this for the first time, I can say that this is better than that Prefab Sprout record. Yeah. This is hitting me in a way that album did not.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't conflate those two things just based on your college experience.
True. Man, there's so much to talk about with this album. I don't know where to start. I have always been fascinated with Belle and Sebastian. Obviously, someone else in college kind of introduced me to it. And at first, I had that reaction that I think everybody has when they first hear it, is like, this guy's voice, I don't know. It's like... I don't want to say wimpy, but it just sounds a little off-putting. It sounds like we're listening to seeing other people, and it's kind of like Charlie Brown. You know, a little bit. It has that little, like, Vince Guaraldi, like, whimsy, and you're not quite sure about it. And then the more it plays, the more I started thinking, it's like Dylan. It's like, you know, those really interesting folk artists, and then...
Bacharach.
Yeah.
It's like Bacharach.
Day by day, I kept being like, oh my gosh, I'm singing these. I'm literally hearing these things in my dreams.
The melodies are infectious.
They're so good.
The first Belle and Sebastian, so my introduction to the band, the first song I ever heard, I think, was Dog on Wheels.
Okay.
From the Dog on Wheels EP. And I didn't have the same reaction as you. I was hooked from the first listen.
Amazing.
Yeah, like his voice, you know, it's gentle and it's fey, but in a song like Dog on Wheels, it sounds a little bit haunted. And then like the music kicks in and it's got like these minor chords and just like, yeah, like the juxtaposition of like the gentleness and like the gentleness, nostalgia, but also like kind of like a little bit of a foreboding, darkerness to it. I don't know. I was like, ooh. I need more of this.
Yeah. Yeah, his lyrics do provide things that you would be unexpected.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that, I mean, let's just talk about what we're talking, you know, seeing other people, he's talking about, well, I guess you're going out and you're sleeping with other people.
It's a casual flame.
I guess that's what we're doing now. I wasn't aware of that, but that's how we're going about it. And it's and everything is such a playful manner that it almost doesn't sink in.
He has a very polite way of telling you when something is not agreeing with him.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. It has that sardonic wit that I always appreciate from Morrissey. Like, Morrissey gets to those...
It's like a northern UK humor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know that's a Scottish band when there's two guys named Stuart.
Yeah. When I was listening this week to Me and the Major, too, I was thinking, man, he must have gotten over his ailment of...
Fatigue syndrome.
Because Me and the Major is an upbeat song.
Yeah.
Like.
Me and the Major always, Rob, it always reminds me of The Recruiting Sergeant. They're like sister songs in my head for some reason.
Huh.
It just, both songs, a young artist conversing with an older military type.
Yeah.
You know, in Me and the Major, he's not trying to recruit him.
Right.
But it's got a similar vibe to the Pogues doing Recruiting Sergeant.
Yeah.
He remembers all the punks and the hippies, too. Yeah. He remembers Roxy Music in 72.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. I love it.
The sort of, when we're talking about nostalgia, it reminds you of the conversations that you have, I think, when you're...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which would have been at the time he was writing this, right?
It
feels like a different conversations that you've had with people. It almost feels like memories.
Yeah.
And that's always interesting in art when it feels like you feel such a part of you in someone else's songs.
Yeah. So much of, like, the subject matter of, like, finding yourself, dabbling in love, you know, wins and losses in love.
Yeah.
Finding yourself being alone, being nostalgic for being a kid, thinking about, like, when you used to be in school. You know, they're a few years older than us, but I heard this a few years after it came out. Like, when I first time I heard this, like, that's exactly where I was.
Yeah.
In my life, finding yourself, having some successes and some failures in love. It just, like, it spoke to me, and it wasn't nu metal.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. Like, yes, this is, I like this.
I'm a sensitive kid in art school.
I was a sensitive kid in art school.
Both of you, like, nerds.
Get me away from here, I'm dying, is absolutely me at age 19.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And even the line, like, no one writes them like they used to, so it might as well be us.
Right.
Absolutely, Belle and Sebastian.
Yeah.
Like, no one's doing this right now.
Right.
You guys can do it. Also, Get Me Away From Here, I'm Dying is just Pocketball's canon.
It is.
Which, they're not alone. I feel like at least every 10 albums that we cover, there's a song I'm like, well, that's just Pocketball's canon.
Yeah. Which is, kind of funny because, like you said, they were like, well, no one's doing... I mean, I might as well do the tried and true.
Right.
It's in the public domain.
Yeah.
Taco Bell's estate isn't coming after you.
Oh, get me away from here, I'm dying. Play me a song to set me free. Nobody writes them like they used to, so it may as well be me. Here am I now after hours. Here am I now on a bus. Think of it this way.
Man, so many good songs. Dylan, the Movies.
Yeah, that one is always a standout track. And I think in a lot of write-ups, people express that would probably be the single if you were to pull a single off of it. It just has that little bass that starts it off.
It's so moody.
The music stops, and then the chorus with the strings is just so lush. It comes in really big.
That chord progression just scratches my itches.
Mm-hmm. And it has the refrain, you know, the chorus, and it's just, it's amazing. So
I like, this happens a few times in our albums this week, when something happens lyrically and then it's reflected musically, like just then when Stuart says, and the music stops, and the music stopped.
Yeah.
There was one on the Fugees album where she's like, where Lauren's like, it's like a beat without a snare, and then the next measure doesn't have a snare.
Yeah.
I like that stuff.
Yeah. If you can put it in cleverly.
Yeah.
Of course. At this point, when they're, about to record this, Stuart Murdoch had taken up a residency in a flat above Highland Parish Church.
He was a caretaker.
In Glasgow, where Stuart was a caretaker, the band was using the church hall as their rehearsal space, began rehearsing new material written by Stuart after signing with Jeepster. This album, took 5 days to record and 3 to mix, slightly longer than Tiger Milk.
That's wild. This isn't a garage rock record.
It's thick.
Yeah.
There's a lot of auxiliary stuff going on in these songs.
Which means that each one of these songs would have been so tight that he would have done it in one, maybe, you know, just a couple takes.
Yeah.
And
the guitar's tasty through the whole album, too.
They are. Yeah, there's some licks that come in and just in the perfect moment. I mean, he knows how to craft.
Yeah.
That pop craft is all over this.
I like the tones. I like the sounds that their instruments are making. Just like sonically. It's like it's not like a throwback, like listening to like Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, like the not just production, but the sounds they can get out of their instruments. I don't know. Some like the tones are warm and analog, and just like in Mayfly, there's a part where like the guitarist just digs into the strings on his Telecaster just a little bit too much. It just kind of like breaks up just a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it sounds so good to me.
Yeah.
It's like, he's like, he just hits the strings and it just clips just a little bit.
Yeah.
And I really, really like it. You know, it just sounds like a single coil plugged into a tube amp clipping a little.
Yeah.
You know,
you get natural takes from stuff like that. I mean, now they would have been like, well, let's just do it 12 more times if you don't like that. But sometimes those little...
Well, I feel it's intentional because he actually does it a few times in the song.
Yeah.
But it was an artistic decision that I 100% am behind, you know?
Real Ian McKay move.
Reflecting on its 20 years, Stereogum, Todd Brennan claimed that Sinister could be, quote, too influential, despite taking a long time for the band's influence to spread. In time, their impact would fully sink into the bloodstream of indie rock world. He saw the bands timidly taken Americanized by bands such as Death Cab for Cutie,
mm-hmm.
also The Decemberists, mm-hmm. and Sufjan Stevens.
And the Shins, too.
Yeah, there you go. Are the Shins, where are they from? Oh, yeah.
They're from, Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, you're right.
Just take me out back and shoot me, please.
Yeah. That's not your scene.
No.
Yeah. But you like this.
Yeah, man. It's great.
I don't know. It's different when it's Scottish folk doing it.
I guess so.
There's something honest about this?
Yeah.
I don't get off any of those other bands.
Yeah.
I don't feel like any of these kids are being hip.
Yeah.
I feel like they're...
It's sincere. There's a sincerity in this, and I do not get that off of any of those other bands. They may very well have been influenced by this, but they don't have the heart on the sleeve aspect of this. This gives me...
Yeah.
The second to last track, Boy Done Wrong Again, reminds me a little bit of like the last track from the Violent Femmes self-titled one, Good Feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's good. Similar vibes there.
I hadn't really considered Violent Femmes, but it's another bit of a sparse production.
Mm-hmm.
Folky.
Honest.
Yeah, honest.
Cowpunk.
Cowpunk, if you will.
I just can't believe that, you know, they did Tiger Milk and then they're like, all right, you're up for another album. He's like, okay, let me see what I can do.
Yeah, I guess I've got 10 more songs rattling around my brain.
10 amazing songs, all a bit different than each other. And,
yeah.
You know, like, what a way to come out with memorable, songs. As much as... when you say it's not a throwback, maybe not a straight throwback, but in terms of piecing songs together like a Beatles album, I think that's very successful in what he's tried to, or Bowie,
yeah.
Like there's certain artists who are like, each one of these songs has a specific purpose for this.
Classical guitar interlude.
Yeah.
It's so simple.
Yeah.
But it fits so well.
What do you think Fox in the Snow is about?
I take it at face value. I think he saw a fox in the snow. Okay. He's like, I'm going to write a song about that.
Okay. I always thought it was like how people can kind of feel like starved for art with the people around them. And so it's like I've always thought it is like you rejecting the world a bit too much. You kind of look outside and you're like, this world, like, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
Like, I can't find anything that would be, like, good for me in terms of art. And then, like, you kind of have to find other stuff. I don't know.
Speaking of art.
Yeah.
The actual compact disc has a little drawing of what I can only imagine as a fox.
Yeah, jumping.
Yeah.
I really thought he was saying farts in the snow.
No, he did not. That is not true.
Are you not hearing what I'm hearing?
You're hearing his Glaswegian accent say fox?
That is not true.
It's what I heard, man. Makes a lot more sense with Fox in the Snow.
Yeah, I was going to mention, too, you were speaking earlier about the sort of touches there and making things not all major chords, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, with some of these, he uses those, like, non-diatonic chords, so it's, like, unsettling. He purposely puts in those...
Yeah. Like
those elements to
the in the refrain of Stars and Track and Field, like Stars of Track and Field, you are Stars of Track and Field, you. Then that next chord,
right,
is like it like rubs on your ears, right? You know,
he knows how to where to put those in,
yeah,
and how to construct that.
He's got a good handle on melody and how notes work with each other.
Yeah.
Ah, it's that old Pachelbel's canon.
Yes, it is. I did forget, too, to his... He kind of worshipped, you know, like Velvet Underground. I mean...
I hear it, though.
This is absolutely inspired by Lou Reed. Like, those somber, witty, crafted, you know, Candy Says and all those ballads that they were doing.
There's a really... simple strumming pattern that probably Velvet Underground didn't invent, but every time I hear a band doing it, I think like, oh, that's like the Velvet Underground strumming pattern. Mm-hmm. And it's like dun 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 dun.
Okay.
And like in Judy and the Dream of Horses, when it finally kicks in after it builds up, that's exactly what like what he's doing, just like dun 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 dun, just kind of like droning on that. It very much gives me the Velvet Underground feels.
Yeah. And his vocalizations, too. He's got a bit of that deadpan Lou Reed voice where he goes up and down just when he needs to kind of emphasize things or, you know, pull things back.
I like his vocal inflections a lot. They stick with me.
Yeah, Get Me Away From Here has those bells. Is that,
that was a vibraphone there.
Vibraphone, yeah. Yeah. Jeez.
5 days, and they're adding, like, vibraphone.
I know.
That means the studio had some fun stuff to play with.
Yeah. Also, there's, like...
I just can't imagine...
There's recorders on this.
Yeah.
It's, like, Judy and the Dream of Horses. It builds up so much. Like, the first verse is just acoustic guitar and vocals. Second verse is, like, acoustic guitar, vocals, and I think two recorders just playing a simple harmony.
Wow.
And then, like, I was looking at the album credits... And yeah, like different people, it's like violin, comma, recorder, comma, percussion, you know?
Yeah.
There's adding all that stuff. There's egg shakers all over this album.
Yeah.
When brushes are too heavy, use the egg shaker.
Egg shaker.
Yep.
She was boring, so they never listened anyway. Nobody was really saying anything of interest. She fell asleep. She was into S&M and Bible studies, not everyone's cup of tea, she would admit to me. A cup of tea she would admit to no one. A cup of tea she would admit to me. A cup of tea she would admit to no one.
Is this the last one we're getting from these guys?
Yes, it is.
I'm fine with that. I think that these first two kind of encapsulate them nicely.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised we got both. I thought If You're Feeling Sinister would have been the only Bill and Sebastian. But
they are still a band. They're still active. They're still releasing new material. And their recent material that I've heard is more electronic, more dancey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Still got the wistful lyrics.
Sellouts.
I mean, it's just...
It's like when Dylan picked up that synthesizer and went, beep, boop, boop, beep, boop, boop.
It's 25 years of an artist evolving.
Yeah. Plus they... I do remember it. When was it? It was like Dear Catastrophe Waitress. That was like the last one I was like, all right, I'm good. I'm kind of good.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had a bit of a realization of being like, okay, I still enjoy this. Like, there's nothing I don't enjoy about it. It was just like, I don't think I need to buy like the CDs, and now it's streaming, so I should probably revisit the newer stuff.
Similarly, check it out. The last one that I owned and poured over was Fold Your Hands.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Say Yeah.
Yes, Fold Your Hands, Say Yeah. But after this one, you got Boy with the Arab Strap, which is great.
Yeah.
And I think after that one is Fold Your Hands, not counting EPs.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say, though, like, each one of those has just, like, standout tracks.
They do.
Too. I don't think he's ever lost the touch of, if you like this, I guess is what I'm saying. It's like, it just continues.
And I like the new stuff, too. Like, I don't own it. I hear it on our community radio every once in a while.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, man, this is a cool, like, wistful, dancey track. And then the DJ is like, that was the new Bell and Sebastian. I'm like, oh, okay. Okay. Sure. I like it. You know?
I always appreciated, too, the covers following the Smiths vibe. But instead of famous people, it's usually just their friends.
Stewart's friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the
holding copies of Kafka.
Yeah. But yeah, this one's especially like pretty cool. It just gives you that like nostalgia feeling of a classic album look. Classic jazz album, I guess.
Oh, yeah, totally.
What it gives. God, always loved the she was into
S&M
and Bible studies. Not everyone's cup of tea. A cup of tea she wouldn't admit to no one. She wouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, interesting.
Yeah.
That is an interesting person.
It's an interesting line written by the guy who lives at a church.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw in an interview with Stewart, not that that's here nor there nor anywhere, says he's a... Personally, he says he's Christian with a lowercase c.
Yeah. Also, I love his his take on everyone saying, well, assuming that he is gay. And he's like, I'm so sorry to disappoint.
It's far more boring than that.
I'm so boring, yeah.
It's like, no, just happily married. Yeah. I'm sorry.
But, yeah, I've seen some concerts, too.
Yeah.
Good show.
I used to, like, back in the early 2000s, not that I cared one way or another, but I wondered whether or not the front person for Bell and Sebastian was gay, especially with lines like, my brother stood up and claimed that he was gay. It took the heat off me for a while.
Yeah.
Like, there's multiple ways you can interpret that line.
Yeah.
You know?
You want to know what Kreisgau had to think about it?
I do. I want to know.
Yeah,
sure. Sly guys, subtler gals. Straight out the stereo. They didn't have enough oomph to open my clip drawer. They go for dim where corporate pop favors hot. They're lo-fi more exile on Main Street than Sebado. So I assume they were two or three twee public school snobs just smart enough to mock their own privilege, with stray art buddies chipping in. In fact, it appears, although they are coy about it, that they comprise seven Popwise Scots in the same general record collector tradition as Orange Juice, Teenage Fan Club, and Biz, none of whom sound like Bell and Sebastian or each other. And while younger folk debate the intellectual content of Stuart Murdoch's mild-mannered cynicism, for me, his clever affect is there to test the strength of his third power catchiness. You don't just recognize these tunes. You don't just hum snatches in tranquility. You sing along, irresistibly, sometimes with verse and chorus both. Just be glad Murdoch is into bemused sex rather than the glories of E or a tax on the cultural industry. A minus.
Nice.
Dude, I sing along with this album today.
Yeah.
I was driving over here and I was like listening to it like on my Bluetooth. I was singing along to every single track that came on.
Yeah.
These songs stick with you.
The little fucking earworms, dog.
They're earworms. And for even people who don't have lyrics in the front of their mind, like me.
Yeah.
They sink in, and you know them, even if you don't know they do. You know?
Yeah, they're distinctive enough.
Yeah.
That's really the magic of the band is they're interesting and distinctive enough within the song. And the song never overpowers him, mm-mm, right? He has such a fey voice, but somehow in the mix, it's always right there where you can find his voice.
Yeah.
It's wild.
We're listening to Mayfly right now. Right here is going to be like just like a little build up, and we'll just dig into those strings. I like that, you know? It just, bop, bop.
Yeah.
It just crackles a little bit.
Yeah.
And my ears love it. I also, now that I've seen that little documentary, I now know that the guitar player, Stevie Jackson, was always trying to lean more into the Velvet Underground loudness of it. And he was always the member of the band that, yeah, that like, if there was an excuse for him to play a little bit louder or to like drive it a little bit, he was the one to like try to push it that way.
Yeah.
So like, it's cool. Like in these like subtle songs, we can hear the guitar trying to
break out.
Trying to break out.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. But still so restrained.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they
a sax solo.
They play some sort of, is it a sax though?
I think is it synth sax? It might be a key.
That is absolutely a keyboard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like a farfisa.
Oh yeah. Farfisa. That would make sense. Yeah. It's amazing. Okay. I don't have to dwell on this too much. It's fun to listen to.
I like this album a lot.
I'm really happy I got to listen to it. I'm glad that the book made me listen to Belle and Sebastian as I poo-pooed it my entire fucking life.
I mean, yeah, I should probably talk about that too. I got such shit for listening to Belle and Sebastian from our rock friends. They were just like, fuck you. Like, this is...
I hope that I wasn't one of those.
I'm not going to name names. I don't really remember. I just remember people thinking... You can't listen to Dead Kennedys and Belle and Sebastian. I was like, what's wrong? They're well-crafted songs. I like Chicken Farm. I like Fox in the Snow. Who cares?
If you had thrown this on in the middle of a party, I would have been like, what the fuck, dude?
Right, yeah.
But, you know, on
if you throw this on in the middle of a record store, Jack Black's going to make fun of you.
It is true.
There you go.
Yeah, on its own
merit. Oh, I forgot. That was one of the things, too.
Yeah.
That was the joke is Belle and Sebastian's too soft.
Too wimpy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The record store clerk, also named Kyle, is the one that gets mocked for it.
Yeah.
Now, on its own merit, these records are incredible. I'm glad I got to listen to both.
Yeah.
The first two.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will say, too, this one seems to be, with the exception of what, maybe Fox in the Snow... Boy Done Wrong Again, they're kind of upbeat.
It's up-tempo.
Yeah. Way more up-tempo than you would think for, quote, sad sack music.
Yeah.
You know, depressing music.
This isn't depressing. It's too poppy to be.
It's wistful.
Yeah.
You just watch the little globs of rain running down the car window.
There you go.
So I like this one. This one has got a special spot for me. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad we got to talk about it. I probably haven't listened to this album before this week. I probably haven't listened to this album like 15 or 20 years.
Wow.
And it was really nice to proverbially dust it off again.
Yeah.
You know, it was like a warm bath. Just come on in, man.
Yeah. Positive for me. Amazing album. I'm so impressed with this just being the second release too. I mean... A lot of
and
people
like
consider
back to back.
Yeah, right after Tiger Melt,
which was a school project.
Yeah, I can't believe, you know, one, I can't believe someone could even write these songs for, you know, in a couple of years, but just having a couple months or whatever.
You gotta A, be naturally gifted like none other,
yeah,
and B, have a chronic fatigue syndrome, so you can't actually have any life. You just need to sit at your parents' piano and figure out your feelings with notes.
Yeah. Yeah, I had never picked up on the chronic fatigue for the Stars of Track and Field before, mm-hmm. Like this year.
Me neither.
I was like, wow. So he actually did envy the Stars of Track and Field.
And before he was afflicted, he was in track and field. He was very enthusiastic about track and field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, can't control that, I guess, but can't control what you listen to.
Well, selfishly, I'm glad that he wasn't a star of track and field. I'm glad that he had to sit at that piano and figure out his feelings with some songs.
Yeah.
because that benefited me more.
So selfish. Yeah, positive for me.
Same.
Positive around.
Positive. This is a great one.
Great record.
Awesome. All right, next time we'll be talking about Blur. Blur.
Blur. All
right, thanks.
When the music stops, take a tip from me. Took it to the park. When you're on your own, it's a long walk home. Well, if they follow you, don't look back. Like Dylan in the movies, on your own. If they follow you, it's not your money that they're after, boy, it's you. Pure, easy listening, settle down on the pillow soft.